We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
The Bucks won a f***ing NBA championship.
Yeah!
What? What?
He tries to take a pulse, babe.
Watching that basketball game, like, caused health problems for me.
Boogie hates racism and Chris Paul. And who cannot get on board with that platform?
If I've learned a lot, this, I'm not going to say it. That sounds too
bad.
No.
The Bucks do win it all. Pat Connaughton's numbers should be in the rafters. Hey there. Welcome to the Eurostep Podcast Network crossover pod mailbag. We have a lot of days off before game three of Bucks Celtics. We wanted to take our minds off of game two. So myself, my expressive co-host, Rohan Kadi, I'm Ty Windisch of the Eurostep, Rohan also of the Eurostep, and the mysterious host of the Win in Six podcast, Jordan Tresky, joins us. Adam got on my case. I don't know if you heard about being selective with my adjectives. So now everyone gets an adjective. Jordan, Rohan, how's it going?
It's going well. It's series is, I dare I say, going somewhat expected. It's competitive. It's going, the Bucks taking one game in Boston, game one, obviously. That's encouraging. That's arguably the hardest thing that they had to do to go into the series, and they got that done right away. Maintaining that, that'll be the hardest part about that with the series going back to Milwaukee. But I think so far, I would say about the kind of series I expected going in.
I'm impatient. I want basketball. I want Bucks basketball. There's not even any basketball on the day we're recording this, which is Thursday. Like, come on. There's four series going on. You can't schedule to have a game every day. I don't understand. It's absolute lunacy.
Thankfully, there's Milwaukee Brewers baseball. Go check out Cruisin' for a Bruisin' for some. Literally, I got up on Wednesday and I just like immediately like tapped into the Brewers season. Like, I'm looking up box scores. I'm listening to the pod. I'm like, I need a break from this basketball thing for a day because that game was ugly. But I do agree, Jordan, that that's the funny part about a series, right? Because going in, it was a bold prediction to say the Bucks would win game one, right? That was Adam's bold prediction. And all of us were like, whoa, spicy. Like, they need to win one in Boston at some point. If they win one of the first two, that's a great start. We all agreed. And then they win game one so convincingly. They lose game two so convincingly. And suddenly it feels like, you know, this dire situation. Thankfully, the Blase Bucks are probably not too affected either way. I feel like they would say the same things no matter what happened at any point, except for winning a championship. Otherwise, no matter what it is, we're just going to get better for the next time and build good habits and whatever else. And George Hill is either questionable or out and never going to play again, apparently. But we do have a different injury update for Boston. Jordan, I'm going to throw to you, our Israeli Boston correspondent.
Yes, Marcus Smart, after missing game two with a, what was it, a thigh contusion? I think that was what they deemed it as. Talking to reporters today, saying strong likelihood I should be back for game three. This is from Jared Weiss of The Athletic. We're just dealing with that last part of getting that restriction on the knee and the joints so I will be able to bend it. Once that goes away, I should be back to myself. My interjection is, yeah, to play basketball, it's very key that your knee bends properly.
Can we get Rohan weighing in on this, our medical correspondent? Because yes, I don't know if I can take your word on that, Jordan.
It is important.
Okay. Now I believe you.
Yeah. So chances are you will see Marcus Smart game 3, 2:30 in Milwaukee. What condition he'll be in, I think that's a fair question to ask, because clearly, not even just the thigh, he got his shoulder dislocated.
Well, they're just saying it's a stinger, right?
Yeah, but it's I guess it is a stinger, but it is just like
it really stung.
Like, yeah, two of his limbs have already been affected. Could 3 and 4 be affected as the series goes on? Probably, knowing Marcus Smart and just his playing habits.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting considering how Milwaukee was able to weather the Marcus Smart flopaganza.
I think you had it at first.
Flopaganza.
Yeah.
In game one, and then without him in game two, they sort of, you know, did not weather that storm. Not given. Correlation is not causation in this case, but it'll be interesting to interesting for sure. Marcus Smart, obviously one of the best defenders on their team, defensive player of the year, fraud defensive player of the year. But it'll be interesting. That's all I'll say.
It will indeed be interesting. I know we have, you know, questions that range the gamut from all sorts of things, some about the series itself. So we're going to talk more about it as we answer these questions. Both in our Discord, people in the GSPN Discord get priority answering. If you would like to get into the Discord, there is a form. It is in mine, Rohan's, and the Eurostep podcast Twitter bios. I don't know if it's in Jordan's bio.
I will update that.
No, we can't afford Jordan's bio. That's too expensive for our link tree. But go to the link tree, click Discord access, wherever you find it, and you can get in there too to get your questions answered right away. Is there anything we should touch on before we get into these, or should we just start the mailbag?
Let's just go for it.
Let's go. Yeah, we'll probably branch off into other topics, of course.
We certainly will. First question from Jakey Poo. If Brook Lopez was a hip-hop album, what would he be? So I think it's got to be something relatively old school.
Yeah. That was my first thought, like 90s hip-hop rap.
I have an answer. I had to look up what the album actually is, so it's more of about a song. But I was basically my answer is whatever album Shook Ones Part 2 by Mobb Deep is on. It's called The Infamous is the album. There was also a single, so I guess I could just go with the single. But I had to go with Shook Ones because it's very old school and cool, like Brook Lopez. And also everyone who ventures into the paint against him is inevitably a Shook One. So I'm gonna go with Mobb Deep for Brook.
There are no Will Chamberlain.
Will Chamberlain.
That's what
true.
I've been told.
Jordan, you want to go first or second?
I'm struggling with this one.
I have one. Let me go. So I did not take the approach of saying, "Oh, it's old school necessarily," because it's not like he's an old school player. He's not an old school player. He's a modern NBA big. What are we talking about here, Ty? But he's not.
What makes him modern?
No, his ability to protect the rim, space the floor.
That's new?
Yeah.
We didn't have rim protectors before?
Well, it used to be just like post-up centers. Okay. Like, think of Brook Lopez back in the day. That's not modern NBA center. Okay. Brook Lopez now is a modern NBA center.
All right.
Like, think of the DeAndre Ayton archetype.
Yeah.
Brook Lopez fits into that category.
Yeah. I think so.
Okay.
I don't feel like that's a hot take. Whatever. But he's obviously not the best, right? But he's still really, really good. He's cut from the cloth of the greats. I'm going to go with Damn, Kendrick Lamar. Okay. It's not his best discography, but it's very, very, very good. Very, very solid. Reliable. Dependable. Brook Lopez.
So going off of what you said, you made a good point of like Brook Lopez, what Brook Lopez was entering the NBA to Brook Lopez now. He has undergone a role playing transformation. What album or artist underwent a like sonic transformation, or maybe not even like, because you could say like the greatest artists or rappers or whatever, hip hoppers.
That's the term. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And say like, oh, this is the album where like everything came together. Like everything coming together for Brook Lopez was coming to the Bucks, but like being just like the super duper role player. So that's where I'm struggling. And I can't think of like a lot. I'm sure there's an answer, but I cannot think of an album specifically that would be like, oh, that is Brook Lopez to a T. Because also he's just like a geek. So like Brook Lopez, who he is, like as a person, like interjects with what I would try to, my answer would be.
Jordan's going to go with nerdcore hip hop, also known as losers, according to Alex Trebek. One of the best clips of all time. Rest in peace, Alex Trebek. Have you guys seen that?
I have seen that. Yeah.
So good, dude.
He's the GOAT. He's the GOAT.
He can bring out the feistiness, but do it in a very like stealthy way that just like knocks you back off your like heels.
Yeah. Should we come back to you later, Jordan?
Yeah, I'll have an answer for later in the pod. That'll be the tease.
Okay. Well, I think this one is less creative. Bigger priority in the offseason, still from Jakey Poo. Bobby or Zach LaVine?
Are we talking general NBA? I'm assuming, right?
No, I would think Bucks. No, it's Bucks. It's got to be Bucks.
Well, how is Zach LaVine even a priority for the Bucks?
Some people think the Bucks need to somehow turn Chris Middleton into a better on-ball creator.
What?
This is not my take.
What? I mean, we saw it last series, right? Zach LaVine was very good. I'm sorry.
I mean, my take is
it might be Bobby Portis.
My take might be better for the Bulls if they lose him rather than give Zach LaVine a full max based on how he's just never really able to stay healthy and how much of his game relies on athleticism. I think he's good, but full max these days, it's going to be like $55 million in the last year of the deal. Like that's even if the cap keeps going up, which it probably will. I mean, it's Bobby Portis for me for sure. No question.
Yeah, Bobby Portis. Logistically, I mean, it makes the most sense too. They have his bird rights.
Yeah.
Right, because he has a player option on this deal.
Yeah,
too.
It's early bird.
Early bird. If he will opt out and sign something else, almost certainly they can't sign him to whatever yet. They need to do one more year, but he can. He could sign like I think nearly $50 million over 4 years. I'm pretty sure like after this season.
Basically, like a John Hammond contract mid 2000s.
Literally any player.
That's pretty much hard.
Miles Plumlee, you get a contract.
Yeah.
Mirza Teletovic,
you get a contract.
That one was not. That gets voided. Fault. That one was sad.
No.
Shout out Mirza.
Yeah.
Mirza.
Mount Mirza.
Yeah. Okay. Next question from Rare Monkey, aka Matt. Rare asked a few questions. Number one, this is an allusion to the Dunkers Spot, a great NBA podcast worth checking out with Nekias Duncan and Steve Jones Jr. But he asks, what's with the extreme lack of seasoning on offense this last game? The first game, they came out with different looks, including my favorite, the empty corner with a deadly three-point shooter at the break. Where is it? And then also, how important is the three in this series? To me, it's the most important thing.
They get in their own heads, as usual.
Yeah. It's really important when the Celtics are making more threes than the Bucks attempted.
Yeah, that's bad.
Game two.
That's bad.
I think it was Eric Dame. I read one of his pieces.
The one today, Thursday, is really, yeah, really,
that's
really good.
That is the fewest the Bucks have attempted in the Bud era, and you have to go back to like 2013 for a game in which they had 18 or fewer threes.
I couldn't believe there was never a game where Jason Kidd just said, no threes at all. We're just not shooting them to teach a lesson.
That's what's even more important or like kind of interesting is like, because that was 2015-16 to a T. It was like you're playing MCW, Giannis, Jabari, Greg Monroe. Chris is like the only like willing shooter that wouldn't get like electrocuted. That's my interjection. But if he was shooting threes,
yeah,
that was reckless speculation. But this series, it's going to be very important if the Bucks, I think. It's not a key adjustment because you could just say like, oh yeah, shoot more threes. But Celtics did a really good job of like throwing them off of their three-point line and having to put like Pat making plays or Grayson Allen making plays and stuff like that, putting them in more uncomfortable situations for them when they are kind of, you know, they were very keen on shooting threes when Giannis is double teamed game one.
Yeah, and I think the real adjustment for Boston was they just didn't send as many double teams, especially early. They sent help a lot better, and they didn't make it as easy for Giannis to find those open players because they weren't there. So I think, you know, where's the seasoning? I think we saw some in the second half. They started incorporating Giannis as a screener, and we saw offensive success, and the Bucks won the second half, I think, because of that in large part. And I think it's not a coincidence. I mean, some of it is, you know, it was unsustainable to keep going as hot as they were in the first half. But I think there's not a coincidence there that Boston's offense tapered off the same time Milwaukee kind of found its own offense. You know, basketball is a rhythm game. You know, I've seen people go, it was 40 to 65 at halftime. Is the 65 more concerning than the 40? You have to look at both. And I think their terrible offense is really fed into defensive issues in that game. So I think, you know, involving Giannis more as a screener for sure. I think the other adjustment, too, is like he's just got to win more of those one-on-ones. I mean, if they're not going to send help, you know, it's great to get him involved as a screener more. They should have done that much, much earlier. Giannis should also just be winning against Grant Williams and Al Horford more. Not every time, but, you know, missing 10 of 12 shots, that feeds into it, too. You know, they're going to have to send that help again if Giannis is dominating those guys. And again, he found more success in the second half. They needed to help him out more. And there were still bodies there. They were just sent like later, a little better. But some of it just comes down to like, you know, if Giannis is his typical destructive force, it's a lot harder for Boston to get away with not sending help earlier. So, you know, I think there's a lot that goes into it. But I do think that it won't take a full half if the offense starts off that way again to see more of like Giannis DHOs with Grayson or Pat or, you know, even like Drew Brooke pick and roll they've done sometimes. Just like some different stuff to not make it so no one is moving. I mean, that's what Adam kept reiterating on our postgame pod. Was like, no one's moving and that's death on offense.
Yeah, even just having Giannis like not involved in the primary actions at some points. Just have him off ball, have him as a cutter. In like aforementioned, like you mentioned, Ty, like Grayson Brooke, Drew Brooke actions. If you have Giannis as the weak side rotation, that's just death for the Celtics. Because he draws so much gravity on his own. And that attention's still going to be there, even if he doesn't have the ball in his hands. So you just need to have more creative ways to get guys involved. I know that's easier said than done, but they've also shown that they can do it before, and they certainly should be able to do it again, considering that they have film. Like, I'm assuming they watch their own film sometimes.
Maybe they're like us. Maybe they don't. It's awkward, you know? They're like, no, we actually don't watch the film. It's...
I mean,
it's
that's really fair. I mean,
they get to like really the awkward 6 minute mark of the fourth quarter, and you see it's like they're down by 25. Like, yeah, we're done. Let's close up shop here.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, I don't listen to these. So.
Yeah. Who are we to say that they should listen? They should watch the film. At least mute it so they don't have to hear themselves.
But I think though this is where, without Chris,
yep,
and kind of the crux of this series with Giannis specifically. Is how do you balance being the guy that the Celtics are going to send walls of defenders, you know, anytime he leaks out in transition
barriers.
Or like
barriers of
barriers. Sorry, barriers. or the early help or whatever help that, you know, that case may be, because it's probably going to fluctuate, you know, depending on game situations. Or being the, like, being the passer that he was in game one. Like, we're gonna see all sorts of like different shades of Giannis where it's like, how can you play? Explaining this very terribly, but it's like, how can you juggle being like that, being selfish and being like, I'm gonna score, make the right play? Cause he's still making the right play when he's always seeing one guy on him. And it's like, okay, I'm Giannis, I can get to the rim at will, regardless of the situation. And I'm gonna try to make the shots. He wasn't making the shots for much of the first half, all the first half, but even like the passes weren't there for him in game two that were there in game one. So it's like this interesting dichotomy that just, I mean, pretty much explains the series from a Bucks perspective, that Giannis, like, he's never had it like this. I think I just saw his usage percentage is like 40%, which is like, I bet is probably the highest it's ever been in a player series for him, even if it's two games. So like he's at it's not surprising to see, especially when they're without Chris, but like it was certainly hammered home in game two.
Definitely was. I think the next question we kind of touched on a little. This is also from Rare. Is there too much play random? I think the first half there definitely was in game two. And that's when, you know, that philosophy of just like trusting the players. It also, like, he waited so long to call the first Bucks timeout, like way too long. And it all comes back to that philosophy. It's, you know, play random, you know, don't be too structured, you know, let the players kind of work it out. It just wasn't working fast enough in game two. So I would think yes, but then I'll just throw out the next question too, and we can all jump in. Last one's from Rare. Who other than Drew can make an entry pass on the team, and does everything really need to run through Giannis since Chris is out? So kind of to your point about his crazy usage percentage, Jordan.
Running everything through Giannis? I mean, I don't know. Do you really trust Grayson Allen or Pat Connaughton? Do they trust themselves in those situations?
That's probably I trust Grayson more than Pat in that situation. But also, like, this is where George Hill's injury really hurts you a lot. Just a lack of another ball handler. Yeah. I'm sorry, Javon Carter. That's not your forte. You have very, very good skills in other departments, but just that's not your forte. Otherwise, you're just asking too much of Drew and Giannis to just handle the entirety of the offensive load. So I agree. You do need to get Grayson involved. Like, I don't know what else you can really do realistically.
Unleash Luka.
Yes. Yes. Thanasis.
Point Thanasis in the playoffs?
Like, yes. Give me point center Thanasis. Just do it.
But that's where we're at. I mean, it's the struggle because you want to see Giannis be maximized in so many different ways because we have seen the story before. We have seen the walls or barriers be built up for Giannis in past playoffs, even when, you know, they won the title last year. Like, they still had to find that balance, find the different ways that can, you know, maximize his screening, his off-ball scoring, just because we know how effective he is. And just, he's 7 foot. He's a center, but he can handle like a guard and do all the things that just make him so unique. But again, you know, you're going into a series without your most diversified scorer with Chris, I would say, even with Drew being as effective as he is. And I mean, largely he's had a good series. Like, I know his efficiency is kind of low, but it's kind of what you expect playoff time, but hopefully not that low.
I mean, hopefully the decision making is better too. I think that's what killed me.
Yeah.
Him and Giannis both, I thought, were making bad calls early in game one. I mean, I think they're going to need more from Drew as well. I think the key is just going to be, I think it just needs to be less play random, a little bit more structured actions, especially when Giannis is off the court. Like, I just think that's how they're going to need to get by now. You know, I think getting Bobby and Brooke rolling more is, or just DHOs, whatever it is. But, you know, that kind of stuff can really help when it's like, okay, we just need three possessions where Grayson Allen does something because Drew is out there, but we can't just run every play through him and have him guard Tatum and Brown. So Grayson, just do three plays. Like, I just think that's a lot better than, you know, just like, all right, dribble around a little bit, try to drive. There's nothing there. Get the ball back out. All right, I'll kick it to Drew and there's 5 seconds left and the possession's already dead. Like, I just think a little bit more structure is the key. And, you know, I think Javon can make an entry pass. I don't know. I mean, he's not a point guard, but I feel like he's a good passer.
I think he could make an entry pass. I believe in him. Which I don't even say that sarcastically. Like, that's insanely difficult in the NBA with the length of defenders. Like, that's why you see guys struggle with that all the time.
Yeah.
That's why it's a valid question. I'm not trying to – no shade intended. Like, that's also actually a difficult task.
Start posting up in the actual paint. This was driving me crazy in game two. They'd get a mismatch – like Bobby Portis with fast PP on him or something.
Well, you can't do that because, like, then you're running the risk of a 3 second right away. So you have to start
outside of it. Yes. Near the paint, right around that area. But I'm saying you can't start a post
up. Get to your spots.
Yeah, you can't start a post up 1 foot within the 3-point line. It takes too long to get down there. Then you're going to get a 5 second violation once you get into the nail or whatever it is. And you're just going to get the ball stolen. So it's like get Brooke and Bobby, if you're going to do post ups, like, get them in the right spot to actually do a post-up. And that's, like Brooke not shooting the first half of game one. I think he took like one field goal the whole game. Like, why? They're so tiny. Like, there's going to be shots there. We just talked about how hard it is to get offense going outside of Giannis and Drew. That's one way you can get some easy possessions. Him and Bobby both. Bobby will shoot over anyone, especially when Boston's quote-unquote bigs are usually going to be on Brooke or Giannis, one or the other, or both. Like, I just think they need to find some easier looks there that are just like, all right, even if Giannis and Drew are out there, even if it's starters, guys are a little tired, it's late in the game or late in the quarter or whatever, let's just throw it down to Bobby, and Bobby can just do his thing. And I just feel like there was not nearly enough of that in game two.
Outside of Wes, I mean, all their starters can play a little bit of bully ball. I mean, it's not ideal, but if
I mean, Wes will tell you he can too.
It's true. Yeah.
He'll show you he knows how to.
But part of why I was expecting this series to be a muck it up type, the slop, is that I thought the Bucks would lean in on that even more so, just because it's like, you have to manufacture something out of this, whether it's playing really good D. And I mean, they get up open threes, but the Boston still had to shoot the lights out as much as they did in game two for their offense to look really effective. So I'm sure we'll see shooting aggression with that, but like, I just think that that's a card that the Bucks can pull. And I don't think necessarily we want to see a 40-minute game where it's like, you know, it's way back to 1987 or, you know, or whatever, Bill Laimbeer's combat basketball. But I do think it's like, it very well may be their last resort of just like, okay, we're going to play this, like the slop game that we wanted to play, and maybe, you know, it works out to their favor, but we'll see.
Yeah. Next question from John, JTXVX. Again, a two-parter. We already kind of got to the first part, but what are the easiest adjustments they can make in game three that you think will help bring back the offensive production we saw in game one? And then defensively, do you think we continue to give easy three-point looks to everyone just to keep Tatum in check? Is it good enough to just hope water finds its level in terms of their three-point field goal percentage?
Well, I think we covered like a bit of the first part.
Like I was going to say, just like to start, does anyone have anything else for to fix the offense for game three?
Stop being stupid, just on a general level.
Yeah. And worth resharing, I think non-Giannis and Drew guys shot 9-for-12 in the first half. They just didn't have enough shots. So I think you clearly need to diversify the offense more. No zero pass possessions, move the ball, move the bodies around the ball, etc.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Okay, so should we just tackle the second part of the question then?
Yeah.
Okay. So defensively, here's the thing. We know that this scheme works. We've seen it work. But the thing is, when there's like a time when it goes wrong, like game two, everyone starts freaking out about it because it's like, oh, the system's broken. It doesn't work. We're allowing too many shooters to get open. What are we doing here? Fire Bud. Just it all snowballs. Maybe I'm being overdramatic, but that's who I am as a person. It's fine. It's fine. We've literally seen this formula win time and time again. It should even out. Here's the thing, though. You can't let, like, here's in game two, a lot of the threes that, for example, Jaylen Brown took in the first half were just coming right off a screen. That is not part of the Bucks defensive scheme. That is because of a lack of fighting through the screen by the ball, like the guy defending Jaylen Brown, and then the center dropping back into the paint. That is a failure of the actual players who are executing the scheme, not of the scheme itself. If we're talking about the threes where you're leaving fast PP wide Grant open, Williams. If you're leaving, yeah, Grant Williams, who's a shooter now. I would tighten up on Grant Williams.
He's from been the working, corners.
He's been working on lethal shooter. Is Grant Williams what Semi Ojeleye thought he would be?
Literally is, yeah. I think it's really the corners. I think his above the break percentage is just okay, but he's lethal from the corners now.
Remember Semi Ojeleye?
I don't want to.
He was on this team. That's wild.
If he still was, they somehow have lost this series already.
I think he'd play.
Probably.
Oh, God, that's depressing. Good thing we don't have to worry about that. but yeah, you have to adjust it to like respond to what's happening. Like I was talking about Grant Williams, you have to tighten up on him. You can't let shooters just shoot right off the screen. You can't allow those type of things to happen, but you got to leave the non-shooters, quote unquote, non-shooters open. Peyton Pritchard, your Marcus Smart, because he's going to be available. Just guys like
Derek White.
Derek White, exactly.
Well, I think part of why Smart likely playing, as he said himself, is going to be a big deal is that I think Marcus Smart to the Celtics, like it just feels like every playoff series that they have, he is like, he play because of how he plays. It's always like a tightrope where it's like, he can easily fall off and just like, he was handling the ball for a lot of like early game one. And that's when, or not like, cause the Celtics came out to a fast start, but like it speeding him up and having him be bring out the ball and stuff like that. Like that's not the best use of him or the Celtics offense. And with the Bucks really keying up on Tatum and Brown and, you know, them playing the way that they did in game one, I think Marcus Smart, like any free reign that he has as a ball handler, as a shooter, like the Celtics will live with that, or they've come to live with that. And the Bucks will live with that because it's like he can have like six threes in one game, or he can have six turnovers in one game and miss all the shots.
Yeah.
It's just, he is the all or nothing player that like, I think the difference with him playing or not playing and having a guy like Derek White, who like Adam and I were talking about it before the series, where it's like, he is kind of like a little bit good at a little bit of everything, but not good at, or great at one thing. Just that kind of inclusion into the starting lineup, I felt like really jolted the Celtics in an obvious way, as we saw. I just think that is going to be really fascinating to watch from a Celtics perspective, is like, Marcus Smart could either like really lift this team up offensively, or it could look like what it did in game one, even with Tatum and Brown probably having better games than they did then.
I thought what's wild about like the limiting their 3-point shots, the fact that after game two, the shot quality page, their numbers, they had it as a dead even game on expected shot quality. So like the Celtics outscored the Bucks 60-9 on 3-pointers. They shot way more than the Bucks did, but the looks the Bucks generated it bricked, like equaled out to that. So then, you know, Giannis scores more. I think they expected Giannis to score 9 more points based on the looks he had in that game. Giannis scores a little more. You even out the 3-point numbers, less turnovers. Like you take some threes, you generate good threes. And suddenly, you know, maybe like you can live with the Celtics hitting some shots. I still think that game, like they definitely broke down and allowed some wide open threes. I don't know how many open shots Jaylen Brown got in that game. He just hit everything. Like, it didn't matter if he was open or not. So I think we all kind of expected a game like that at some point, especially, you know, Celtics really going into that with their backs against the wall without Smart. They basically had 5 guys who could play in that game. I know Derek White started. I know, like, not being Marcus Smart may have helped their offense, He scored 0 points, and like he's a good guard defender, but not really for any of the Bucks matchup wise. Like he's not strong enough to guard Drew. I guess he's fine on like Grayson Allen or whatever, but he's not really making a difference there, I don't think. And he didn't score. Like he made 2 of the 3 threes in the first game. He shot 9% on threes in round one, a series they swept against a god awful defense. Like they had the four starters beside him and Grant Williams who could play. We'll see how Smart looks when he comes back. But I just think there's more there for the Bucks, and I don't think they have a huge three-point problem. I think they just fell apart late in that game because they got beat down. But I think tighten up those bad mistakes. You're going to have some. Everyone has some. But I still think if you just generate better offense, it's going to work out pretty well in the end anyway.
It's also, too, like they were down from the moment that the Celtics scored.
Yeah.
So it looks like a bigger problem just because they were chiseling away with like a butter knife when you're like expecting them to like shoot threes and try to get back into it, because they had a legitimate shot to get back into it at some point, but it just obviously didn't work out that way.
Correct. Last Discord question from assistant producer Eugene. Eugene asks, is it actually better for the Bucks if Smart plays next game? Potentially? I don't know.
Maybe, because you're introducing a non-shooter.
I'm a little too, well.
a non-shot
A volatile shooter. You're introducing a volatile shooter. I don't want to say good or bad and do a jinx or anything. But I think it depends. I mean, does it give them an emotional lift to see him back? Maybe, although they kind of already had that in game two anyway. I agree with you, Jordan. Like the extra the ball handling they asked him to do, that was like one of the big, you know, levers they pulled this year. You know, it's good. I think having him dribble against Drew Holiday full court with one arm was not a great idea, and we'll see how his arm is feeling. I know his knee is the quad, or it's a lot of problems for Marcus Smart, but you know, it depends what they ask him his role to be. But I just like, outside of just being more depth that they clearly do need, I don't know what role they needed from him that they didn't have filled in game two.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. I mean, I ultimately just come down to like a less than 100% player, Marcus Smart or whoever. The type of player that he is, where he, again, super duper role player for the Celtics, obviously defensive player of the year, but you know, all that stuff, but like he can help them as much as he can hurt them.
Is he the defense version of Russell Westbrook? Just like so involved. People love him, but we're not sure.
Kinda, yeah, just because Justin Superbike's like a little video montage of just like he's just everywhere like at once, and it's like that's not even the guy that you're guarding. So you're just getting in the way, kind of, you know, the nuisance and irritant that he is. But like, I just think like if he is hampered by a thigh injury that has fluid in his knee, as he said, like, I don't know how effective he will be. What if, you know, he could play game three, but that might not be starting, you know, like, I don't know if they would actually do that, just because I think there is something when it comes to this time of year and even when you're not 100%, and if you're deemed as like a, you know, coming off the bench, like that is a big adjustment. But I don't know. I think it is better for the Bucks that Smart does play. And I don't know how great he's going to look.
That's why I said interesting at the top.
It's better until he makes like 8 out of 10 threes or something.
Yeah, but that might not happen.
It might not happen. We'll see.
We can't assume that happens.
I think they'll let him go early. I think if he starts to make them, we'll see the Bucks approach him differently. But we did see, like, in game one, they were basically just like, all right, dude. Honestly, they kind of do the same with Al Horford, which is hilarious because he actually can shoot. He just doesn't like to. But, like, they look at Smart, Time Lord, Horford a little bit, Derek White a little bit, Pritchard, and they're just like, yeah, okay, good luck. All right, if it's not Jalen or Jason, we're okay with you doing anything. They just need to be a lot more careful with Grant. And I think a little more careful with Horford, but we'll see if he ever actually decides to make them pay in a significant way. Now we'll go to the Twitter questions. the plebs, get in the Discord for priority question
asking. Wow.
Just kidding. We love our Twitter friends too. Andrew Snyder at AC Snide asks, who would win in a fight, Lucky or Bango?
Bango.
Yeah, I think,
Bango's whooping some Lucky butt.
Jordan's not sure.
I mean, yeah, it's got to be Bango. He's got the animal instincts. Lucky is wearing his little puffy pants and just like doing the Conan O'Brien square off thing with his fist.
I don't think it's as powerful, but I have to assume a deer kick is like in the neighborhood of a horse kick. And I know a horse kick.
No, are we assuming it's an actual deer?
Yeah, Bango is a deer.
Bango's not a real deer, though. I think we're talking like actual Bango mascot versus
Lucky. So you just want two guys to fight. That's how you took this question? A guy in a deer costume and then just a guy who's dressed like an idiot?
Yes.
I guess Bango, because he has extra padding then. It's like a force field. I assume deer versus leprechaun.
Also, I mean, Lucky's wearing a vest. That's any type of person that's wearing, like, yeah, your shoulders are, you can fight, but I don't know. I feel like that might, it's not like a flak jacket that could protect you from deer kicks.
Have we ever seen Lucky jump off of a giant ladder? Like, I feel like Bango has more proven athleticism, too.
For sure.
No, Lucky's just going to the Cheers bar where everybody knows his name. And that's it.
It's unanimous. Bango over Lucky. From Son of Gray at @Sayin_Justin, why on earth do the Bucks have 3 off days followed by a 2:30 p.m. tip on Saturday afternoon? Is at Adam McGee 11 lobbying the NBA to better accommodate his schedule? Adam already weighed in, said no, they're not. These haven't even been good times for me. Adam suddenly getting real picky about day games for Europe viewership, a convenience.
I don't want to hear him complain about having to stay up anymore.
I'm okay with it. It's pretty brutal.
Also,
if he's complaining about day games, though.
It's fair.
I will say it. I don't mind the break.
I do. I'm impatient.
But this is where, I do agree. Like, their scheduling does feel weird that they have, like, I know that they want to capitalize, like, every having 2 games on a night, but.
It's weird to have 3 days where the same 4 teams play twice. And no one else plays when there's still 8 teams involved.
Yeah. Yeah. Theoretically, you shouldn't have an off night.
Yeah. But someone said they didn't want to go up against Doctor Strange and Cinco de Mayo. And I'm just like, I feel like that's not a consideration for the NBA. I didn't even know the Doctor Strange movie was coming out. The Marvel people are going to be upset with me. I know I'm in a basketball space, but.
But they compete against Easter, right?
Easter is small potatoes compared to Cinco de Mayo and Doctor Strange. Apparently,
Doctor Strange and his multiverse of whatever madness.
They play on Christmas. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, they play on Christmas. They play the only other days that they.
It's just, we can just say it's poor scheduling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Hogfest.
Yeah.
That's why the Godsmack thing. I've been informed it's called Hogfest. It's like a bigger deal than just Godsmack.
Yep.
That's why they can't play in Fiserv on Friday
30
night.
To 50 feral hogs just roaming around Fiserv.
It's actually the same hogs from the tweet. It's pretty hype. It's ooh, a pretty big deal. Yeah, people are excited about Hogfest.
They're like they just travel around from arena to arena.
I would rather this is a hot take. I'd rather watch Hogfest than Red Panda for the 1800th time. I've heard I don't know. We'll move on. From Steve Pelishek at Steve Pelly. Probably a cynical question, but is this series really going to come down to who shoots better from 3? With a nod to @FMaddenNBA, Frank Madden. Hoping for at least a couple hard-fought games where neither team really has the edge there.
It looked like you were about to say hog fest.
I have hogs on the mind now. I would much rather go to the Feral Hog Fest than to see Godsmack and other whoever else is at the Music Hog Fest.
Yeah.
What is happening?
Hogs.
Nice.
Hogs. Jordan, Rohan. Sorry, I got you guys confused again. You look a lot alike.
We look very similar.
Yeah. Rohan, is the series going to come down to who shoots better from 3?
No, it's going to come down to who allows the quality of threes.
You think so?
I think so. It's more nuanced than just make or miss threes.
I think it's more nuanced than either. That's how nuanced I am.
Mm.
I mean, you're right. It's more than just that. The series is going to come down to a lot of that, a lot more than that. I'm saying that's going to be a factor.
Yeah, yeah, no, but I have seen the sentiment though of like, oh, whoever's hotter from three, whoever gets and makes more threes is going to win the series. That's because both the defenses are so good. I think the Bucks could generate a lot. I think the Bucks could get outshot from three, not ridiculously, obviously, like they did game two, but I think they could get outshot from three, like 35 to 40%, like something like that, on even if Celtics shoot a little bit more and still win games, because I think they have more avenues to run better offense. Like, I think even with the Celtics' offensive explosion, again, I think we've seen the Bucks defend them well at times, even in game two. And I just think if the offense is better, their defense holds better as well. And I just think, you know, Giannis gets going. They get Giannis some easier looks. Like, you know, we've seen the Bucks shoot terrible from three and beat teams who shoot well. I don't know if they'll be able to do it to that extent, but I do think that the Bucks could be the worst shooting team and still win. Thankfully for them, outside of Giannis and Drew, they've shot fairly well from three so far this series. I think they have more reliable shooters now. But I don't think it's as important. I just think it's about the overall looks for the Bucks, not just the threes.
Yeah.
Well said.
All right. From Robert at MKE Robert, no stranger to the mailbag game. Robert asks, do we think the Bucks adjust their 3-point defense or stay the course?
I think we answered this one already. Just sort of adjust it, but keep the same.
Clean it up a little.
Yeah, clean it up.
Okay. Clean up on aisle defense.
They have the right idea of what they want. I do think, to your point that we said earlier, is that, like, the shots that Jaylen Brown was missing, like off the dribble and stuff like that, game one, like, he was missing them horribly, short on a lot of those. He was making them with ease in game two. So, like, I do think that off the dribble kind of juice that, you know, Tatum and Brown kind of give the Celtics, that obviously the Bucks are missing without Chris, that's going to loom large, like, to the overall 3-point defense discussion. Yeah. But yeah, I would welcome Al Horford shooting threes. I would welcome Grant Williams if he is not in the corner.
Yeah.
Yes. Like, I do think the Bucks had the right idea. It's just a matter of, you know, not falling into a hole that they can't get out of as they did in game two.
Yeah. And I do think the biggest defensive change that I'm going to look toward is, you know, do they use Brook the same? And I know Brook's overall game in game two was kind of a mess. He got into foul trouble. They started having him come out a little bit farther from the rim. Then he just didn't play as much because of the fouls. And I think, you know, they were really good in the minutes that Bobby and Giannis played without him game one. I think that Bud tried to go back to that. I do think, like, figuring out how to keep Brook out there for longer is going to be a big deal. Like, despite the plus minus, like, we just saw what he did defensively in game one. And I think trying to find that happy medium of how far he comes out to contest mid-rangers while still, you know, defending the rim and boxing out there, I think that's going to be really important as well. So I'm just going to look at Brook and how much he plays, how they use him in game three. That's what I'm most concerned with. But yeah, I would also, you know, just don't help from the strong side corner as often, please. Like, that would be beneficial.
That's a Pat mistake.
Yeah.
When he did that, I think it was like second quarter.
Grant, I think it was.
And I was like, how many times have we seen that kind of thing?
Yeah. It's more, it's a Giannis, like, thing, too.
Yes. Giannis, it's more of like, you can see the discipline that the Bucks play defensively in game one, and they just, you know, kind of lose it in game two when things are, you know, they're down bad, literally. I think it's just that you just have to play within your principles and kind of just general NBA rules. Like, not everybody can say, like, talk about help defense is such a, like, very intricate part of, like, basketball and everything like that. But it's like, when you leave a guy that's in the corner and the ball's, like, right here and no one else is, like, the vicinity of, like, defending him, it's like, probably shouldn't be doing that.
It's probably bad.
Yeah, probably not a good idea where you're kind of like the crux of holding things together on that side of the floor defensively. So
if you just think about it, and I'm not saying you can in that moment as the defender, but if you think about it right now, If you give up a 50% shot to a good corner three-point shooter, it's worth 1.5 points. That's the math. That's the point per possession. Mid-range shots don't get that much better than 50% on average. That's worth 1 point. Like, you know, the math is there. Give up the two. Even if he makes it, it's a lot better than making the threes, both for the score and I think momentum too. I felt like Boston was going craziest after the, I mean, like there was a Tatum dunk, like dunks obviously, but, and the Robert Williams dunk was sick. The long alley-oop, but like those corner threes, they were going nuts. It's just like, just don't do that. Make him make the two. I mean, the Bucks' whole defense is built on that. And yet, all right. From Steve again, second question from Steve Pelichek. Will Giannis really figure it out?
Yes.
Yeah, he's Giannis. Answer. He's Giannis. Yeah.
He figures everything out. What has he not figured out?
The Chick-fil-A sponsorship?
I think that's a Chick-fil-A problem.
I think he actually did it locally, as I say that.
Yeah, I think they
Or was right. it, did another chain, did Culver's move in? I don't remember.
Culver's tried
they
to.
They tried to.
They tried. I don't know if they did. I think a local, I don't know if anyone officially did. I think they just run like deals that, you know, like they make it clear it's him, but without using any trademark infringing. If you want the 50 piece and the special drink with no ice, come on in.
Yeah. Culver's didn't enough or offer enough cheese curds for, yeah, this is worthwhile.
Now I'm hungry.
Yeah. he's going to figure it out. It's to what extent figuring it out is when, again, you're without Chris. It's not going to always look great,
yeah.
But he's not going to go 1-for-12 in a first half again. I think that much is clear. It was the same question that probably a lot of people were saying after Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum combined to go 7-of-31 in game one. You know, like, and this is the playoffs. This is what happens when someone underperforms.
That's why this is like a really interesting time in the series, though, right? Because now both teams have had moments to say that. So now when it does level off, like this is really, and I mean, I know the Bucks should be expected to win since they're home games, but now it's really like, okay, if it levels out in between, who takes the first game? Like who sets the tone now? Assuming, you know, we don't see the Celtics go as nightmarishly bad as game one and the Bucks at least as the first half of game two. So it isn't a really, game three is going to be fascinating. Two more questions. One more from Robert at MKE Robert. Lineup change or no lineup change?
No lineup change.
What would you do?
Why would they? Yeah, I think Grayson instead of Bobby. But like, why?
Yeah, I would not either.
No. I don't know what. It's something like that. Like at this point in the series, where again they already took a game in Boston. Like
yeah,
that is they're gonna have to do it again. Obviously, considering where the series is at, but like. That is one of the hardest things to do, and to do it in game one without one of your best players and stuff like that in the manner that they did is already a huge achievement. I just think like to go from game two being, you know, obviously a huge, they were on the struggle bus, and then their next like recourse of game plan and everything is to go from Bobby to Grayson or whoever else, from Bobby to Pat or whatever. I just think that like only can create more harm than good. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I don't think that there's not an obvious reason to make the toggle, right? You know, if the reason they lost game two was, oh, Bobby got cooked, you know, then maybe we would say, yeah, it probably will. I don't know, Bobby played fine. You know, I don't think there was anything clear in the first five that gave Boston the edge. I mean, I think if Giannis and Drew play that poorly and make those bad decisions and don't make any shots, it doesn't matter who is the fifth guy or the fourth guy or the third guy. So I think I just think the way they lost does not lead you to thinking like we need to make some sort of a change here.
You don't punish like a role player like that for being like, they're the reason why Giannis is not playing better.
Bobby, you were 5-for-7. You held up on defense, but Giannis started 2-for-12. So you're on the bench again.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't see it.
He'd love it too. He'd
be okay. I don't think he'd love it, but he'd be like, oh, yeah, you're right. Underdog.
Yeah.
I'm dropping Bobby's a new shirt.
He's the best.
He is. Last question.
Second to last. I think we have one that you can't see.
Oh, okay. Okay. I don't know. That's scary if I can't see it. The bee's knees, second penultimate question. At Sean T. Cronin. True or false, Giannis's basketball IQ is the single most underrated feature of any active NBA player. Probably false.
I wouldn't say.
What would it be then?
Of any active NBA player.
I don't. Probably something like. He's so popular. He's got two MVPs. He's got a finals MVP.
No one thinks of him as being like a highly intelligent basketball player.
I think people are coming around. Also, not a great time to ask the question. Wasn't really on display for the first 24 minutes of the last game.
I think it is severely underrated.
I think it's probably underrated. I don't know if it's severe anymore.
I think in general discourse it is. Not within Bucks discourse.
Well, yeah, no. I just remember the whole like MFers thought I couldn't pass thing after the finals. Like I feel like around then, I don't know. I felt like that was kind of, I don't know, maybe I'm just thinking of our conversations.
But I think it's our conversation.
That was our big conversation this year. Maybe it's still underrated. Or is it undervalued? Underrated.
I think it's underrated. I don't think it's of any active NBA player.
I can't think of anything though.
Huh?
I can't think of any super underrated skills of players.
Yeah, I don't know. And anything that's talked about on social media is so distorted by
someone's
feet. You know what I mean? Like, what are we parsing? Like, someone be like, this guy got dunked on. And it's like, you know what I mean? Or like, the Anthony Edwards, like, you know, like, whatever. I just think it's just so distorted. Like, okay, we're like, if we actually talked about like skills that, like, you know, not to bring him up, but like, Draymond Green, like we always like, oh, he can't shoot and all this stuff, but he somehow manages to make the Warriors this incredibly potent team that might make the finals again this year, depending on how they play against the Suns or if they make it out of the Grizzlies series, without being like an effective shooter or willing scorer because he's that good defensively and he's that good of a passer, just reads the game at a incredibly intelligent level. Like, yeah. I don't know, like it's. It's hard to parse it from like that perspective. Like Giannis is just so great in so many different ways, but like a guy like Draymond Green or even like a Marcus Smart type player. Like
I have an unpopular answer. I think. Sorry to cut you off, Jordan.
No, it's okay.
Rudy Gobert's defense. I just think people don't care anymore. I think people blame him for Utah's defensive struggles.
I think people have come around on that though. They've recognized that Utah. You just their perimeter defense.
You know what the problem with this combo is? Because we're all talking about different groups of people that are so loud, like Jordan said, that it's impossible to parse. Like we'd have to poll like 1,000 random NBA fans, which you can't really do. Yeah. But I don't know. I just think for a guy who's that good at defending the rim, that a lot of people think that he's like the reason their defense struggles. Maybe.
Yeah, I do think that is.
Yeah, it's call, fair.
Especially it's now, fair. Like it's going to be to the point where it's undervalued because he's not the only. I mean, it's not like he's helping.
It's not his fault that it breaks.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's the guy that's patching everything. He's Spider-Man or the end of Spider-Man 2, where he's holding on to like the train. Yeah. Like you know, like come on, guys, let's go.
And then the rest of Utah's players are just cutting at the webs.
Yeah, I think it's almost got to be someone like that.
Yeah.
Or is it like Herb Jones' defense? Because like a lot of casuals don't even know who he is.
That's fair.
Like nodded, you shook your head right away, Rohan. Everyone who knows about Herb Jones knows. But I mean, there's a lot of people who probably just have not paid enough attention to watch. So I think it's either a maligned star or someone like that who's just like so under the radar that Brandon Ingram scoring.
We would have talked about Giannis after the Heat series where it's like, what? Like, not even a Heat series. We're talking about probably during the Nets series, I think, you know, like about like, can he be a number one? Can he find ways to score and all that stuff? But like, that is always going to be an ongoing conversation just because, you know, the best way to beat Giannis is make him take tough jumpers and not, you know, make barriers towards the rim and stuff like that. But like, I don't know. I think that's a more interesting way to look at it, is that like, there's always going to be something undervalued if a team like Utah or a team like the Bucks a couple years ago just flames out of the playoffs like spectacularly.
Yeah.
And you just like, oh, everybody trade everybody. They're not getting along. And that's also kind of true. Like it's not nothing. The pieces aren't working in concert to like how they hope it would be. But like, yeah, I think I like that answer a lot with Rudy.
Thank you. All right. Final question, Jordan, the secret question.
This is from Joey Harris. It's a private account that you don't know, which is why you can't see it.
There we go.
Hypothetically, if Rohan had to play at least 5 minutes in game three, which would help Milwaukee's chances more, if he played for the Bucks or against the Bucks?
Against the Bucks.
Against the Bucks.
I'm sorry. How is that even a question?
Why?
Why?
Yes.
So you're, are you actually questioning if we think you're a plus rotational player?
I'm asking what's going to go wrong in those 5 minutes.
Just about everything.
Like what?
Actually, you know, maybe it wouldn't matter if you're on the Celtics because the Bucks don't target enough defensively. But I do think, like, how long are you holding up if Drew is posting you up?
Oh, I'd give up immediately.
That's why.
I mean, but the thing is that any worse than any other Celtic?
If you just miss threes but we're not good on defense, that's just Derek White who's not good on defense.
Exactly.
But that's worse.
But Derek White's already like not – he's going to fail defending Drew's post up anyway.
But I think he's going to fail better.
He might – yeah, he's going to fail better. And, I mean, Drew misses the shot kind of thing. The process can be bad, but the results could –
yeah, what if I scare him so much he's like, why am I this open that he misses the layup?
Drew missing the layup is very reasonable. I also think like he might bully you to leave the game before the 5 minutes.
I'd probably get hurt immediately.
Maybe. I don't know. I feel like you're in okay shape.
I would love to see like Rohan like shooting like a wide open corner three, but like Al Horford just running at it. That's a bad example. But like someone just like this gigantic Robert Williams.
No, Pat's Robert the scary one. Imagine you're about to shoot a three and Pat is just like soaring through the air at you.
This like spider monkey just like whoo, like
yeah. Oh, see, here's what I do then. Then I pump fake and then I sacrifice my body and get a foul.
I think the processing speed of that though is hard.
I think I'm kind of intelligent.
It's not. Well, it's a different thing.
It's a different thing when you're playing against an NBA.
I know.
Rohan thinks Magnus Carlsen is out there. You're drawing 50 free throws a game. He sees the next move.
I do not think that I am capable of playing on an NBA court. Let me be clear.
Do you think you make a three in three tries?
Three tries? Probably not.
Okay. That's good.
In that situation, no.
Yeah.
If it's like open gym, yes. If it's an NBA court, no.
How about this? Okay, you know, like the game that they do during the, timeout or whatever at Pfizer, where it's like you shoot it from free throw line for like $500, shoot it from 3-point line I think for 1,000, shoot it from 5,000 or shoot it from half court you get 5,000 if you make it. Which one would you pick?
Free throw.
Interesting.
I would shoot the three because I don't trust myself to make the free throw. And it's better if you miss the three than if you miss the free throw.
Yeah, but there's still a higher percentage of the free throw.
No, I know, but I'm more worried about the negative outcome.
People miss the free throw. It's not the worst thing.
Yeah, but I don't want to do that.
Like, no one cares.
People who don't host NBA podcasts miss the free throw and it's not a big deal. If I miss the free throw, every time someone disagrees with me on Twitter, it's the guy who can't even make a damn free throw telling me about hoop. I'm burning the tape if I have to take the shot.
That's fair. I think I'd take the three then.
I think the three, the half court is stupid.
Yeah. But
yeah, it's just never.
Yeah.
It's epic if you make it. I mean, the guy who said like, you can call me anytime or whatever and then made it. Like, yeah, is that epic? Of course. But it's like one in 10,000 tries or something.
Yeah.
Maybe not that. What do you think one in 100?
Yeah, something. Maybe it's the last. It's
probably less because there's a lot of there's people who take it who like literally could not probably make it. That's the sad part.
Are we talking half courts?
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of people can't even get the ball there.
Yeah, and it's sad when they do it. Like they'll do one where it's only half court. I don't think that's even fun.
No.
Practically 1 in 100, but this is NBA players collecting.
Oh, like heave data?
Yeah.
Oh, that's, yeah. So it's way, way, way less than 1
that's
in
an NBA player.
Yeah, it's got to be like 1 in 50,000 then.
Yeah.
If not higher.
Do you guys remember when Trill Withers did that poll of like all the people? Like, do you think you could score on Harrison Barnes in 5 minutes? And 65% of people voted yes.
65% of people are idiots.
His follow-up was great. It was like, all these people votes in the next presidential election count as much as yours. Think about that.
Oh my God.
And that explains a lot about where we are right now as a nation. Harrison Barnes is 6'10"?
Yeah, he's an actual plus defender.
Yep.
He's 6'10".
He was like the number one recruit in his like high school class.
It's like
he's like an insane world class athlete as well.
Yeah, they all. That's the thing. It's like the Scalabrine thing when Scal's playing like former D1 players and they're just getting like destroyed. He's been retired for 5 years. He was never that good, but he's so much better than anyone you've ever played against.
There was a David Roth of Defector.
Yeah,
former Deadspin fame. I saw this randomly on my Twitter, perusing it yesterday because I was bored at work. There's a picture of Todd McCullough, Sixers net center from like the early 2000s. I can't remember if he's on that Sixers team that beat the Bucks with Ray Allen. There's a picture of him in high school getting quadruple teamed. And he's just like 7 foot guy. And it's like, he was not a scorer by any means. He was just this big stiff guy that, you know, rebounded the ball and existed during a specific point of.
He was on that team. Yeah.
He was on that team?
He was on that team.
But yeah, like guy like Todd McCullough, or like it's like you could think of like any random NBA player that just like has existed and has made his way on a bunch of teams, and it's like, yeah, they're still stars and all this stuff.
If you've heard of
him, I will concede that I could shoot a fadeaway over Isaiah Thomas.
I don't know. How high can he jump?
It could be like Kristaps and, you know, Wesley Matthews.
No, but like a fade, like a literal fading jumper.
I think there's a shot he stuffs it. He can dunk, right? Yeah.
Barely.
I don't know about post.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know if he can.
I think he at least used to be able to. It's different now.
Yeah.
I could shoot. I could get the shot off on a post fade.
But the issue is he's like 2 inches shorter than you.
No, he's not.
Isn't he 5'10"? Oh, no,
he's not.
What is he, 5'6"?
He's way shorter than that. He's listed at 5'9", but that's a generous 5'9".
So we'll say 5'8". So he's 5 inches shorter than you?
He's got a 6'2 wingspan, though.
Yeah, I was going to say, he's probably got an equal wingspan.
Yeah, I have a plus wingspan.
And he's way stronger, no offense.
No, he is. I mean, no, he's a professional athlete. I'm not denying it.
Where's this fadeaway being taken?
Yeah, because you'd have to get it pretty close to the rim, because you're not moving them.
I'm just saying. Dirt
shot.
Yeah, I'm saying I could get a shot off. Oh. I could not. Yeah, I could. There's no chance I'm ever stopping him.
You think you could make a shot off of?
Well, I mean, like if I can get a shot off, there's a chance it goes in.
Potentially, there's a small shot for sure.
Yeah. That's the only way I could do it, though.
Yeah.
So the answer is Celtics. Right?
Do you think the Bucks would guard you? Because there's two ways.
No chance.
Well, here's the thing, though. They either leave you wide open. I think they leave you wide open, but they probably, like, if you have the ball, I think they're just going to go take it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They do, I would. The ball would be out of my hands before I even get it.
Yeah.
They, like, rondo him or, like, the non-shooter kind of thing.
Yeah.
Where they just like completely abandoned you.
Yeah, Giannis would be your matchup. You could tell people forever Giannis defended you, sort of.
Defended in quotes.
Yeah.
But the answer is Celtics?
Yeah, the answer is Celtics.
Yeah. You don't think I could be a positive role player? You don't think I could step in and take a charge? Because I don't.
No. If you're smart, you won't either. One possession is not worth your happiness for life.
More my life.
That too.
You know, I'd get killed. Maybe. Like, imagine me trying to take a charge from Robert Williams.
Oh my God.
Oh, dude, you'd get Brandon knighted for sure.
I'd get it'd be worse than Brandon Knight because I just
I don't
like,
know if I that's possible, dude. Some of the,
I think it's worse because I wouldn't be able to jump.
It might be that, but like he also might jump over you, so it's like a Giannis Tim Hardaway kind of situation.
Oh, imagine an oop! They get him like Jet against LeBron.
Oh my god!
Oh my god! I forget.
See, the thing is, I wouldn't try it on that.
Yeah, you can't go in. You can't go around the rim. That's dangerous because they look at you. They see Food City. They see Dunk.
Plus, like, I don't have the respect of the officials, so I'm not going to get an
offensive foul. Definitely not.
Yeah, no.
It's going to be all you're out of position.
Yeah, Kate Fitzgerald's going to whistle that, and it's going to be an official NBA.
And it's not like Bud's going to waste a challenge on me. You know,
no. He's like, Rohan, you just got rocked. Get back on the bench.
No, Bud's waiting to call timeout for 10 more minutes.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Oh, just lay there.
I'm out here just like my leg is bent like another way. It's like he'll walk it off.
You're just like crawling off the court. It's like play on. Pass time out. Play random.
Time out. It's like, yeah, why bother calling a timeout? It's 4-on-5 anyway, even when he's healthy, you know? Like can't waste the timeouts.
No. All right. Well, that's a great last question. Yeah, I think we're all done
thanks,
now.
Joey.
Yeah.
I think you knew where that was heading and you just wanted me to get roasted, Joey. So appreciate
it. It's not even really a roast though.
It's not. It's the truth. Like I accept it. I'm not going to fight you on it. I know that I'm not going to survive. I'm a rational human being.
Yeah. I think you're the best GSPN hooper.
I've never seen you guys hoop.
I'm not very good.
Rusty.
You're also the youngest. That helps too.
That was a good key.
Jordan's taller than me though.
Who is?
Jordan.
Taller, sure. But I'm rusty. I haven't played in a long time.
Well, do you have a plus wingspan?
I think I might.
Jordan for sure has like a sick elbow jumper.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know why I said that confidently. Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny.
I'm just imagining we rock up to Ireland and Adam just like busts out like a Kyrie dribble package on us if we ever play.
Given his feelings on Kyrie, I think if he could, he wouldn't out of just like choice. He'd be like,
that
no,
would
I
be
won't.
The funniest thing though to happen.
That would be hilarious.
Yes. He's like, just this wizard with the basketball.
His day job is actually a lie. He just dribbles two basketballs with plastic bags on them all day, every day.
Yep.
He'd probably actually be on the Irish national team if he could. We also don't know how Eugene hoops. Eugene Ooh, could true. Be a hooper.
Eugene's younger than me.
Yeah. And he might be tall, too. We don't know much about him, but he looks tall and lanky.
And on that note, let's wrap this up. Thank you for listening to this Eurostep Win and Six crossover. Thank you for all the questions on Discord, in Discord and on Twitter. Appreciate that. Look out
Sorry,
for more
I called
in the future.
You plebs, people on Twitter.
Yes, we apologize. Please don't block us. Or at least, like, I don't know, whatever. Just keep doing it. We're sorry. Make sure you check out gspnstore.com for all the best merch in the game. Jordan's modeling it on YouTube right now. Speaking of which, go check out the YouTube. Go subscribe if you're not there already. If you are watching, just subscribe. Why not? Just do it. Leave a like as well. Turn on the bell for notifications when the videos get posted so you don't miss it as soon as it drops. Check out Substack, gspn.substack.com. Make sure you leave a 5-star rating on your podcast platform of choice. Make sure you subscribe. If we get a new review, I'll sing it. I said that last episode.
Ooh, let me check.
When I checked, I didn't see one, but you might have something different. And while we're waiting,
hit the wrong
Jordan.
One.
What's Brook Lopez's album?
Ooh, oh, yes, good call. This is the one that popped in my head, and I really just have not been able to shake it before. I went with like Outkast, the Love Below speaker box. Yeah, I don't know why, but it's not like any other Outkast album.
I mean, Outkast is always a solid choice, so I'm not going to disagree.
I like it.
Yeah.
What did you say, Ty?
Mobb Deep, right?
Yeah, Mobb Deep, the Shook Ones album. Yeah. I think it's called The Infamous.
Yeah. Okay. Is there?
What was yours wrong? Why am I forgetting?
Mine was Damn.
That's right. Kendrick, yeah. No, no new review. Nothing for you to sing yet.
Okay. So make sure you leave a review. I'll sing it on the next episode. But yeah, thank you for listening, Pod Random. We'll talk to you next time.